Welcome to the third episode of our podcast,
Tales from the Midnight Society.
How are you this week?
I'm okay. If anybody listened to episode number two, then you know that I was sick last week. I am still sick. My immune system is letting me down currently. I am having many coughing fits during my real life. I cut all of those out of the last episode, which
there was many.
Yeah. You're gracious. You're gracious. Your ears were not graced. What am I trying to say right now?
She didn't fuck with your skulls by making you listen to what I had to listen yes. to of her coughing for an hour and 30 minutes straight.
Oh my God. It was so bad. And the thing is too, like, I cut them out really well in the episode, but in real life, I'm just like all the time. So Anyway, how are you?
I'm good. I think I mentioned it on the first episode, but I am engaged. And enthusiasm. And we finalized all of our honeymoon stuff. So the cruise has always been booked, but the excursions are booked. The flights are booked.
It's always been booked since the day
I was born. No, but like basically since we started wedding planning, we booked the cruise. So you can't back out now. Like,
no, you gotta get married now.
Shit's in motion. I mean, I don't have to get married, but I have to go on the cruise.
Yeah, your fiance is just gonna have to deal with you for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
I'm just joking.
We love Keegan.
Keegan, if you're listening,
we love you.
You're our number one fan.
Yep. I mean, he really is. He listens to every episode. He helps us listen to the edits and tells us what needs to change and what doesn't. Like, he's a legitimately good guy, so we probably shouldn't shit on him.
No. Keegan and Ashley are like couple goals. I don't know what that is like because you're I'm gross. Dreadfully single.
This is getting sad.
Why is that my real life? So are you going to tell everybody what happened last week?
No.
No?
So since you're listening to this, that means you've already listened to episode two, I hope. And if not, stop listening and go back and listen to episode two. So we did episode two and I like wasn't scared during it because we're sitting in Demetria's well-lit home. And then
I have many lights.
She lives in a condo and I have to explain this to make this make sense. So she is on the bottom floor by like the side back entrance. So instead of going in and out the front door, we just use the side entrance because you can park by there too. That entrance is not lit at night.
No.
So we finish recording. It's late at night. And I feel like I'm fine, but we're talking about Paul Bernardo and like some murder. So I get out the door. The door slams behind me. There's no lights. So I like panic run to my car, get in my car, lock all the doors, and then realize that a serial killer could be in my backseat.
Like Paul did do in the last episode.
Literally. So I'm checking my backseats frantically, and then I start driving home, and I'm like, what if I didn't check good enough? Like, what if they're going to attack me while I'm driving? So like I call Demetria and make her sit on the phone with me for basically the whole car ride home, because apparently I'm a scaredy cat.
I mean, it's a pretty scary story.
It's not, though. Like, and I got home and I was fine. I just, like, was, like, we had just finished and I kind of left abruptly and then the door slammed.
And you're like, wow.
The heebie-jeebies, they creeped. They
I
creeped
could get
in.
Murdered any second.
Yeah. And then I wouldn't be booking my flights and my excursions.
She would not be getting married, that's for sure.
Going on my honeymoon. So that's what happened last week.
That's kind of exciting because I love putting the fear in other people. Yeah, I'd like scaring people. I mean, last week's episode was just like too real. Like the first episode we did was
I mean, you'd expect like a ghost story to be a little bit more like run to your car scare, but I don't know, maybe it's because like you said, he did attack someone in a car and like it's one close to home, but two he preyed on people. I mean, I don't want to rehash it, that's not what this episode's about, but just because like he did that at night on the streets and then I was at night on the streets, like it was too much, guys.
It's so funny. When I was a teenager, I always used to say, like, I can kill a human, but I can't kill a ghost. Ghosts are not the problem.
Humans
are the problem. Like, if someone...
Why were you talking about killing either?
Well, no, but, like, if someone attacked me, I was like, I can fight off a human, but I can't fight off a ghost.
And now you're like, bitch, I cannot fight off either.
Now I'm like, leave me alone. Like, and then I got cats, and I was like, my cats will save me. And I had a bug in my house. What, 2 weeks ago?
No, that wasn't even 2 weeks ago. That was like last week.
Yeah. And I literally set it on the ground so that the cats could kill it. And they played with it for an hour.
And then let it leave.
And then I was like, I got to bring this outside.
Your cats are useless.
Literally. And I'm the only person that could fend for myself. But it's fine.
So today, Demetria last week was like, we'll try to go light this week. And I was like,
Yeah, because we're recording two episodes today. So I was like, let's make it somewhat short. we're doing this on a work night. So I was like, let's not be here until 11 o'clock. And then Ashley's like, I got 15 pages of material.
I'm sorry. Okay. I don't know. Like, she said we had to record two in one night because Dimitri is going on vacation next week because she gets to be warm and sunny and off of work. But so because Dimitri is going on vacation, we are recording two episodes tonight. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to pick a story that I don't think is too long. And then I dived into the research and I was like, I can't not include this. I can't not include this. And it just kept like repeating. And I was like, well, I have 15 pages now.
Yeah. So I guess this is going to be a long episode as well. Maybe next episode will be short, but I guess we'll find out. You'll have to stick around to see.
If not, the second episode of tonight, the fourth episode is going to be a very tired sounding episode that we may need to record again.
Yes. But we'll see what happens. But we're going to get into it, right?
Yeah. Right now. Oh, are you trying to be funny?
No.
We'll get into it.
We're gonna do it.
No, but I thought you were making a pun about your excessive need to say, I'll get into it later.
Oh my God.
You're like, we'll get into it.
Guys, if you listened to the last episode, Ashley kept asking me questions and I was like,
I'll get into it later.
I'll talk about it later.
You did all talk about it later, like in your defense. You just also developed a catchphrase on episode two.
Because I didn't want to spoil my own story, but I didn't want to not acknowledge what you were saying.
So I'm telling the story this week, Dimitri told last week. I am doing a true crime story this week. I know you listened to one last week and we said we were going to try to change it up. I failed. I'm sorry. I got excited. I really wanted to tell this one. We'll try to be better.
Well, the thing is, our podcast doesn't have like a specific theme where it's like true crime, supernatural, blah, blah, blah.
Like we don't have like a pattern.
No. So the thing is, if we have two true crime stories in a row, you're just going to have to be happy with us.
Yeah. Because we'll try not to do like three in a row. Like we're going to try to give you some variety, obviously. We're not going to claim to be all these things and then just be like true crime, true crime, true crime, true crime.
My episode is true crime.
Seriously?
No. Did you believe me?
I did. I thought you were hitting me with some truth.
It's not. Spoiler alert.
So there we go. Dimitri's episode's not true crime. We're not doing three in a row. Everything's good. Okay. Today, I am telling the story. Actually, before I tell you what story I'm telling.
Oh, okay.
A cat bit my toe. That was the noise.
I know there was one down there.
Yes.
Specifically the baby one.
I wanted to mention first, the story I'm about to tell is one that I grew up with, have been told it since I was little.
Same. We both grew up in the same area. That's how we know each other. So. Yeah.
I've been told it since I was little. I did a public on it in project school. I did a project on it in public school, which I mean, looking back, I have to go into this for a second. I didn't plan to, but I'm gonna, because this is like a disgusting true crime story. And I was in public school.
And you're like, this is cool.
Yeah. So we had to take a real event and make like an art project on it.
Okay.
So I did this story and my little fucking weird. And you know the worst part is my mom let me, like my mom helped me with this project.
Shelly, what is wrong with you?
But I made a diagram of the house where the massacre occurs.
Oh my God.
And I bought little skeletons from the dollar store and I painted them red.
Oh my God.
Where the people suffered their injuries, and then I placed their bodies where they died on this diagram of the house.
Oh my God.
And I was in grade, like, I'm gonna say grade seven.
Shelly.
And my mom helped me, and I remember I handed it in, and the teacher didn't want to mark it because she was like, this is technically a real event, and you did make an art project on it, but, like, also you're a child, and why, like, I remember the teacher wanted, like, to have a meeting with my mom, and all of this stuff happened, and then it never actually, like, my mom never had to meet with the school because the principal was like, this is harmless, like, you're dramatic to the teacher. But, like, looking back on this, I thought I knew a lot of it then, but, like, realistically, obviously, they're not going to tell a child a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But this story is, like, really screwed up, and the fact that I made a death diagram in seventh grade, like, I made a murder, like, essentially map.
Yes.
In seventh grade, so... Mom.
Shelly.
What were you doing with me? Yeah.
You guys don't know, Ashley's mom's name is Shelly.
Yeah.
And she apparently raised...
A little weirdo.
But it's funny because now we're doing this podcast
She was helping make the little weirdo.
Yeah. Like, this is Ashley, as a child, her dreams, who just talked about weird fucked up shit. So
yeah,
it's come full circle.
It wasn't even a good diagram because, like, I'm not artistic. Like, I painted little plastic skeletons and made, like, a really hideous house. Anyway, moving on. the reason I have like 16 pages of notes is because there is some paranormal reports today because this happened in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. So I also wrote those because I'm not going to thoroughly research something and then not give you both sides of the spectrum. So realistically, we are kind of mixing it up because you're getting a twofer here.
A twofer.
That's the most Canadian thing I've ever
literally
said.
As soon as you said that, I was like, a twofer, eh?
Okay.
We're just really Canadian, okay?
Eh? So my story is about the Donnellys of Lucan, Ontario. I didn't write this down, but they get called the Black Donnellys.
Yeah.
That's not a racial thing. It's because they came from Ireland, and back in the 1800s, tons of European settlers came to Canada.
Yeah.
But specifically Lucan, Ontario, and like that entire township area
yeah.
was Irish. Like it's all Irish settlers. And yeah. the Irish settlers were divided into two religious factions, essentially.
Was it like a Catholic versus yes. Protestant thing?
Yeah. And like the Catholic side, like the side that the Donnellys, the Black side essentially was welcoming of the people who lived in Lucan, where the other side was like, our religion or nothing, like you don't believe the same things as us, get the fuck out, kind of.
Yeah.
So they were part of the minority side. Their religious views play kind of a role in like how the town views them.
Yeah.
Although I have other reasoning for a lot of the rivalries. A lot of them say that there was obviously always religious undertones.
Yes. Not to take away from your story, but I grew up in this area. Like I lived near Lucan for 8 years.
Yeah.
And there is still very much an undertone to the community there, and they ostracize anybody that doesn't fit into their community and what they want for their yeah. community. That happened to my family while I was living there, so I could see 200 years ago that just being 10 times worse.
Oh my God. It's bad. I mean, a lot of the research and the reason I didn't write anything down about like why they're called the Black Donnellys is because a lot of the research doesn't have any strong proof that there was religious involvement. There's secondary reasons, but people looking back on it believe that there could have been large religious undertones to all the violence.
Yeah, and discrimination based on religion as yeah. well. Well, it's small town.
It's small town mentality, for yeah. sure. Okay, so like I said, we're doing the story of the Donnellys of Lucan, Ontario. It's a story of an Irish family who migrated to Canada from Tipperary, Ireland in 1842 to escape poverty. At the time of the migration, it was James and Joanna Donnelly and their young son, James Jr. When they came to Canada, they arrived in London, Ontario, where James took temporary work to support his family. So then that was in 1842. In 1844, they had a second child while living in London named William. By 1847, they had realized that the city life wasn't where they wanted to raise a family, and they wanted to put down roots in what they called the Canadian countryside and headed for Lucan. Having no money to his name, James and his family obtained land illegally from Canadian Land Company. Oh. So, yeah. So back then, basically, Canadian Land Company, it's called Canada Land Company. I don't know why I keep saying Canadian. Canada Land Company owned, like, all of Lucan.
Yeah.
And it was farms in Lucan. And it was super common for European settlers to squat. That's, like, what I mean by obtained land illegally. Typically, someone would buy the land, but just to own it.
Yeah.
And then they would not actually be there.
Mm.
So European families who didn't have any money would just come and live on the land
yeah.
because no one was there to tell them otherwise.
Well, probably too. Like, I'm assuming these lots were like huge lots of acreage. And
yeah.
maybe if someone took a small corner of it.
Oh, no, he took the whole piece.
Oh,
so,
my God.
The piece of land was lot 18 on the 6th concession of Roman Line. It was 100 acres and it belonged to a man named John Grace. Like I said, he wasn't around. He just bought the property to have the property. Soon after, James built a log cabin on the property for him and his family. Over the next 8 years, they expanded their family. So they bought the property in...
Well, he didn't buy it.
No, sorry.
They stole
the property in 1847. And then I'm going to give a quick timeline of the next 8 years because they just live there and make babies.
And made babies.
Yeah. So in 1847, soon after acquiring the property, their third son, John, was born. In 1849, their fourth son, Patrick, was born. In 1850, their fifth son, Michael, was born. In 1853, their sixth son, Robert, was born. In 1854, their seventh son, Thomas, was born.
I thought they had daughters.
No, they have one daughter later.
They're just like popping out boys like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah. So the family, now consisting of 9 people.
Oh my God.
Continued to share that small cabin on the 100 acres. They farmed the entire land and built a life for themselves there. In 1855, the owner of the property sold half of the property to a man named Michael Mayer.
Michael Mayer is like, why are you here?
So it's again like a sale where the man never goes to see the property.
Oh my God. So these people are just buying it, never going to go look at it.
Yeah. So John Grace was essentially like, I have 100 acres of unused property, and then sells it to Michael Mayer, who is then like, I'm going to try and rent this to people.
Yeah. Unused, quote unquote.
Yes. Yeah. So when James learned of Michael's intent to put the land up for rent, he refused to give it up, challenging anyone interested in the property to try and take the land from him. And this seemed to keep any interesting parties at bay. So he basically like made it known in the town, anyone comes here, I'm going to fight them.
Yeah, because they had a farm. They had a cabin there.
Yeah, they legitimately had a life there.
Yeah.
That worked for quite a while.
I wish that's how life worked like that now.
Yeah. But then Patrick Farrell, I'm going to say Farrell, rented the land from Michael Mayer. When Patrick went to obtain the land from James, because, I mean, it's a small town, right? So, like, he gets the land. He knows James. That's where James lives.
Yes.
So he goes to obtain the land, and he's met with fists immediately because that's what James said he was going to do.
Catch these fists.
Yeah.
Catch these hands.
Patrick did not want to fight, though, so he took James to court over the land.
James was like, we're going to have a fight right here, right now. We're just going to do this. And the other guy was like, you know what?
I'm going to obtain this legally.
I'm just going to go to the courthouse.
Yeah.
That's like the barbaric way of doing it. And then like the right now
way. The most civilized way. Yes. When I have to say this, like when I read that he was taking him to court, like the first thing that popped into my head is this guy doesn't fucking own it.
Yeah.
It's stolen land. He's going to go to court and get in so much shit.
Yeah. Judge is going to be like, you don't own this. Please leave.
No, but that's not what happened.
Oh my God.
So the court.
Oh my God.
The court, seeing the work that the Donnelly family had put into the land, offered James legitimate rights to the 50 acres that they'd done the most work on and that their house was on. And it said he could have rights to this land if they would forfeit the back 50 acres that didn't have as much work on it to Patrick.
You know what though? There's actually a law that if you have a patch of land that you can prove that you have had your property on or you've had a garden on or that you've been using for 20 years and someone tries to fight you over that land goes to you.
Because you've done work on it. Yeah. So that's what happened. Both parties agreed to this reluctantly. So
they're like, we don't want to fight.
We don't want to share. So over the next 2 years, the animosity grew between them. Patrick Farrell claims that James would start fires on his side of the land. And James claimed that Patrick was slandering his name around town. So in June 1857, a neighbor, William Maloney, had his neighbors over for a barn raising and, of course, some drinks.
Mm-hmm.
After a few drinks, Patrick and James got into an argument about all the animosity of the shared land.
Yes. And these fires that he was setting. Apparently. Yeah. He was just pyro.
Yeah. That's a theme for this family.
Oh.
The argument quickly turned physical and eventually ended with James striking Patrick in the side of the head with a handspike, resulting in a hole in his left temple and ultimately Patrick's death.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So like they get really heated and fists are flying and James grabs a handspike and right on the side of the head.
So he did not catch these hands.
No. James fled and a warrant was issued for his arrest. When police went to the Donnelly homestead, James was nowhere to be found and he remained missing for the next 11 months.
Oh my God.
However, this is where it gets kind of funky. So it is believed that during the 11 months, Joanna and James Jr., who is now 15,
mm-hmm.
That's his first son, William, his second son, is now 12, and John, his third son, is 10, because they're the three oldest boys, they assisted his mom in hiding James on the property.
Okay, so they knew where he was.
Yes.
They hid him on the property.
Yes.
I was going to say, like, do you know where he went?
Yes.
But
during that time, neighbors reported seeing glimpses of James on the property wearing his wife's clothing.
Oh, my God. He's just like, okay, I have a warrant for my arrest. What is the best way?
To live my life.
To live my life without getting caught. And he's like, wifey, I'm going to have to go into the closet.
Yeah. Like, my favorite part is during the time that he's hiding, so this is 11 months, near the end of that time, their daughter Jenny is born.
Okay.
So, like, he's hiding from the law, but he's not too hiding to make a baby.
Yeah, he's like, I'm coming in your dress nonetheless, but I'm coming in.
Oh my God. So shortly after his daughter is born, a friend named Jim Hodgins convinces him to turn himself in. The trial was set to be held in Goderich, Ontario, and despite hiring the best lawyers available to him, he was found guilty of the murder of Patrick Farrell and sentenced to death.
Wow. I didn't know this.
What?
I didn't know. Like, I knew that they moved to the town.
And then got murdered. Yeah. But, like, this is what I mean. There was so much backstory that I had no idea about.
There was one thing that someone told me, that the son was a troublemaker, which you might bring
this up. I'm going to bring this up, ma'am. Okay. Hold your horses.
Okay.
So he was set to be hanged in September of 1858. Also, I realized earlier, I believe I said 1958 for Jenny being born. If I did say that, it was not 1958.
He was wearing his wife's clothes for 100 years.
Yeah. If I said that, it was 1858. I'm not sure. My notes accidentally say 1958.
Oh my God.
So I started worrying there. But yeah, he was set to be hanged in September 1858. Joanna, devastated by her husband's pending death, began a petition for a less severe sentence for James.
Rightfully so. She's like, wear my clothes, man. This is...
Well, and she, like, they were being shits to each other. So, like, as much as, yes, he killed him, it was also kind of like they were both fighting.
Yeah.
So the death penalty maybe was a little bit severe.
Yeah.
So in July of 1858, her hard work paid off. There was notes saying that she carried this petition everywhere. Like, everywhere she went. She was going to the bank, she carried the petition, would get seven people to sign. Like, she went everywhere with this thing. Wow.
We love a strong woman.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, the petition paid off, and his sentence was reduced to 7 years in prison.
Wow, that's awesome.
From, like, the death penalty.
Joanna's out here, she's like, my husband deserves to live.
She's hustling.
She is, literally.
For an 1800s woman, she hustled.
The Beyonce of Luke, Ontario. That's all I gotta say.
On August 6th, 1858, he began his 7-year sentence at Kingston Penitentiary. During this time, his sons grew into men. So Lucan had become a hotspot at this time for rivalries between different European settlers. I touched on that in the beginning.
Yep.
The Donleys had a reputation now in the town for their father being a murderer.
Yep.
So their mother thought the only way to protect them was to teach them to defend themselves, even if it meant fighting dirty. Mm. So she raised them to be fighters, and the town had already outcast them based on their father. So they built a reputation as fighters, vandals, and thieves.
Why do I hear the Karate Kid theme song in my head right now?
Because it's like the mom raised them into, yeah.
The mom's just over here being like, wax on.
I think that, like, they were probably getting, like, picked on a lot growing up because of, like, what their father did, and it's a small town. So she was just like, defend yourself.
I'm assuming kids would probably even pick fights with them to be like, oh, your dad killed somebody. Like,
what are you going to do? Yeah. So one local farmer, Bob McLean, tried to press charges against the Donley boys for the theft of his tools. And immediately following his report, his house was lit on fire. His barn was burned down. His cattle were all poisoned, and the throats of all of his horses were slit. This was believed to have been the Donley boys.
Oh, fuck.
Although the Donleys weren't to blame for all the dangerous activities in Lucan at the time. So obviously, like I said, it's like, I don't want to say gang, but like it's a little gang, like, violence-y.
I was going to say like mob almost. Yeah. You could say mob.
I use the word mob later in my notes because I don't know what else to call it. So there was a lot of activity at that time in Lucan. But despite that, the Donleys had established themselves as the toughest family on Roman line.
But they were, if they did do that.
I mean, that's how they established themselves, seemingly. Yes. Yeah.
And obviously, like, they're not.
This guy tries to report them to the cops, and they were like, this is what happens when you report us to the police.
So they're literally like the Italian mafia, but like the Irish.
Of Lucan.
Yeah. The Irish mafia.
Of Lucan. Yeah. So James returned home in 1865. He did not waste any time in joining in. He was like, I'm going to be shunned by the town too.
Yeah.
So he, instead of like scolding his boys, he was like, yes, let's do this.
Or learning from his mistakes.
Yeah. So his first action when he came back was he lit the barns on fire of all those who testified against him in his trial.
Oh, fuck.
So like everyone at that neighbor party who witnessed the fight all said he
had killed this guy.
And so he lit barns on fire.
Became a pyromaniac.
Yeah. So over the next couple years, the boys, as well as James, were all charged with so many crimes. I couldn't even list them. There was so many. They were all petty, just like theft and lots and lots of arson.
Yep.
Fire is like this family's thing.
Yeah. And arson at that time, I mean, arson is hard to prove now. at that time, it'd be even
impossible.
Harder.
Yeah. So they were charged with several crimes, but they were always acquitted.
Yeah.
By the early 1870s, they had finally settled down. They're adults. Well, young adults.
Yes.
They settled down. They want to start a family. Several of the boys even got married.
Oh, so they found women that like pyromania.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's hard to say that they were bad people per se. Like, yes, they were the toughest family in a time of tough families, though.
Yeah.
So.
And they had to do what they had to do, I feel like.
So in 1873, the family, led by the son Will, who is the second oldest.
Yep.
Started a stagecoach business between Lucan, Exeter, and London.
Yep.
In 1874, Patrick Flanagan emerged.
Ooh.
Another Irishman also wanting to start the stagecoach business.
Yep.
And they began to fight for the claim of Roman Line, of being the Roman Line stagecoach business.
Yep.
In 1875, something that is to this day known as the stagecoach feud begins.
That has a name. It must be important.
Yep. Destruction to both Flanagan and Donnelly coaches result in the death of a Flanagan stagecoach driver, William Brooks. Later in 1875, someone breaks into Flanagan's barn, completely demolishes his stagecoach, and mutilates several of his horses.
Oh my God. Why are they killing these poor animals?
I know. There's so much animal death.
So much animal death.
Flanagan, enraged, assuming that it's his rivals, forms a mob and heads for the Donnelly barn.
Yeah, because they have a reputation of doing this. I'm sure he's like...
Yep, and they're the rivals, and he just automatically assumes Donnelly.
Yep.
And they'd been in feud for a year now.
Yep.
So the mob arrives at the barn where the Donnelly boys, well outnumbered, have bats, and they emerge victorious from the fight.
Oh my God. So they're what their mother taught them...
is paying off. Like, yeah. they established themselves, okay?
Yeah, and they were... It wasn't just all talk.
No, like... So from 1875 to 1877, the feud, that's the main time of the feud.
Yeah.
It's in full swing. Lucan is a very dangerous place. There's not only the stagecoach feud, but there's European rivalries. There's so much going on. There's fires aren't common everywhere.
Yeah.
Mob fights in the street, violence, robbery, assault. Like, it just was not a good place to live.
That's crazy to think about because even though...
It's such a peaceful town now.
Exactly. Like, nothing goes on. Like, a corn waves in the wind the wrong way and people are like, oh my God, like what's going on?
Yeah, yeah. No, it was bad. So during this time, pretty much everyone in Lucan was in and out of jails.
Wow.
Like you couldn't be in Lucan and not be involved and not be in problems with the law. So much so that several of the police officers at that time were in and out of jail.
I was going to say they were probably super corrupt.
Yeah. Being charged with being corrupt all of the time, being charged with fights, being charged with shooting people. In 1877, at the end of the feud, James Jr., the oldest son, actually dies of a gunshot wound.
Oh my God.
And some people believe that it was part of like street fights would break out.
Yeah.
And some people believe that it happened during that, but I couldn't get any
exact details.
It was kind of like the most vague thing of the entire report. I probably spent 3 hours trying to find out how he died.
Yeah. See, I was always told someone had shot him because
of the family.
Yeah.
No, so him, the one thing I could find is like his gunshot wound was like just a casualty of a fight. Like it wasn't, like guns were fired, fists were flying, everything ended and he was dead on the ground.
See, I was told that he was the one who instigated that fight.
No, this is way before.
Wow.
Yeah. So in 1878, the stagecoach business in Lucan closes down. One, because of violence, but two, because like trains were starting to open in the area. Stagecoaches weren't necessary anymore.
Yeah.
In 1879, a man named Father Conley creates a group called the Peace Society to try and end the violence in Lucan. Many of the Donnelly's enemies join this group, including a man named James Carroll. James Carroll is reported to have had several altercations with the family during the last 5 years.
So he is a big enemy of the Donnellys.
Yes. When I say many of the Donnelly's enemies join this group, I'm making it sound like this group is literally just like a Donnelly hate group.
Yeah.
It isn't. It's just largely made up of the other side, unfortunately. And that's just what happened at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like people getting together originally to hate on the Donnellys. Like it just happened that a lot of people.
They just had opposing opinions to the Donnellys.
Yes.
And then just happened to also get together.
Yes. James Carroll becomes a major member of this group and is later named a town constable.
Oh, wonderful. Give him a gun and yeah. rights to kill people.
Carol urges, as soon as he's named the town constable, he urges neighbors to dissociate from the Donleys, and it is even believed that he aided in setting up the Donleys for several crimes over the next year.
Oh, that's what I mean. Like, give him the right to have yeah. power in the community. Why not?
He's super pissed off at this family, has a personal vendetta for this family, and is now using his power to be like these people.
Yeah, fuck y'all, essentially. Yeah.
So on February 4th, 1880, the Peace Society, led by James Carroll and filled with the belief that the Donleys were the sole cause of the violence in Lucan, descended on the Donley homestead.
Fuck.
So I'm about to get in to the serious stuff. So the following events that occurred on February 4th, 1880 are through the eyes of a farmhand named Johnny O'Connor. These are like part of his statement against yeah. like James and his band of shits. So it was late at night and Johnny was spending the night at the Donley home. This was pretty normal for him. He was a farm hand. He would work late into the night and then
just stay.
Sleep over. Yeah. So when he stayed over, James would share the room with him and his wife Joanna would sleep in the room next door that was now vacant because their sons had moved out yeah. to be married and live their own lives. In this particular evening, they actually had Bridget, their niece, from Ireland, visiting. She was 21. She was just visiting them for like a week or so, and she'd been staying in that room. But because Johnny was staying over, James was sharing the room with Johnny, and Joanna and Bridget were sharing a room.
Makes sense.
Tom Donley, the youngest son, age 25, and he was the only remaining Donley boy living on property. He stayed to help his mom on the farm, was in his room just off of the kitchen. Sometime between midnight and 2 a.m., Johnny woke up by James scrambling to get dressed.
Oh.
He immediately noticed James Carroll standing in the living room.
Oh, my God. This guy's just in their house.
So other reports, because there's no one else to tell the story, unfortunately, but other reports from him on other websites, this was the like official report, but yeah. it does say that he wakes before and hears the knock on the door and like I'm going to have to use last names here.
Yeah.
James Donnelly lets James Carroll into the house
yeah.
in his pajamas. And then he's in the living room and then he goes to his bedroom to get dressed.
So either he's in the living room or he was then let in.
Yeah. So that's just speculation because it's just what the boy saw, right? Yeah. And that's what all of these tales are from. So he immediately notices James Carroll standing in the living room. When Donnelly asked Carroll why he was there, Carroll stated they had charges to place against him.
And he's the constable, so he could actually...
Yeah, but like, this is midnight.
he's just like, I got a bone to pick with you. I can't wait till the morning.
Yeah, but like, he can show up and do that because he is a constable.
It's just random that he would show up in the middle of the night unless he had ulterior motives, which I'm assuming you're going to get into. Yeah.
So Joanna and Bridget soon woke and joined both men in the living room.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny mentioned that he could also see Tom, the 25-year-old son, in the kitchen on his knees handcuffed.
Oh.
So assumingly, based on this, a lot had already happened before the boy woke up.
Yeah. Because he woke up and then he's like, oh, there's already a scene.
Yeah, a scene that had taken place. Tom demands to see Carol's warrant.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as Tom starts yelling at Carol about the warrant, that's when all hell breaks loose.
Oh, fuck.
Carol lets out... Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, did he even have a warrant on him?
No.
Okay, go ahead.
This is definitely a vigilante situation, and they're just using their law
to lean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Carol lets out a signal, and the door bursts open, and about 20 men armed with clubs, sticks, and other farm tools enter the home.
Oh, fuck.
They surround Joanna, James, and Tom and begin beating them to death.
Oh, fuck. That's not fair.
Johnny saw Bridget making a run for the stairs and immediately tried to follow her. But she slams the door in his face, terrified, not knowing who's behind her.
Yeah.
So he runs back down the stairs and hides in a pile of clothes in the room he was originally in.
Yeah, because, like, Bridget has nothing other than the fact that she's related to them.
She has no ties.
No ties whatsoever. She's come from Ireland to stay with them by chance. Like, yes, the actual Donnellys might have done things that they shouldn't have done.
Like, I see that because I read the history and they were crappy in the community. But it sounded like so was everybody.
Yeah.
And they were just the most crappy because of circumstances and everything falls on their shoulders.
Yeah. So they really were following just the trend of what was happening in the town at yeah. the time.
So.
But I feel bad for Bridget still.
Yeah. So once Johnny is settled, because he has to like rebury himself in clothes in the room, he sees Tom make a run through the living room. So just because we've kind of gotten off topic here, Tom was originally in the group being beaten, but he escapes.
Yes.
And he makes a run through the living room and out the front door. He hears them catch him and beat him further outside before returning and dropping his unconscious body onto the living room floor.
So wait, who did they catch outside?
Tom. So Tom was in the group being beaten, like Joanna, James, and Tom were being beaten.
Yeah.
Sometime when Johnny was repositioning himself in the room, Tom gets up and runs across the living room out the front door. And because the bedroom that Johnny is in is right beside the front door, he can then hear them catch Tom outside and beat him. Then they see the men with Tom reappear and they drop an unconscious Tom on the floor.
Oh, fuck.
He then hears the men discussing breaking Tom's skull open and they hit him 3 more times on the head with a spade.
Fuck.
Yeah. Next, he hears the men discuss how they need to head upstairs for Bridget.
No, she's innocent.
So they head up the stairs. He hears no sound as he assumes they take her life.
Oh my God, no.
But it's because then they descend the stairs and announce that she is dead.
Oh my.
But he doesn't hear that happen.
Yeah, but still, like, well, innocent baby.
Yeah. Satisfied with the deaths of James, Joanna, and Bridget. Oh, sorry, Bridget and Tom. The men lit the house on fire and left. So then Johnny, petrified, hides amidst the flames until he's sure the murderers have left and then fled the residence.
So he would rather sit in a fire, or not in a fire, but like very close to the fire than meet foul play from these men.
Yeah. No, he was like in the fire. They lit their farm tools on fire and like threw them places around the house and like one went right in his room.
Oh.
He also said that as he was leaving the house, like fleeing, he could see that Tom and Joanna were still alive, but he was terrified and a child, so he just fled.
How old was this guy, by the way?
Johnny.
Yeah. Do you know how old he is? Because I know you said he's a farmhand. I assumed he was an adult.
He's a young farmhand. Like, he's a child, but I didn't write it. I'm so sorry, listeners. I mean, it's not super important. I think we're okay. Either way, farmhand, and he's scared.
Yeah.
And
anybody would be an adult.
Yeah. So,
or not an adult.
He flees across the street where he's taken in for the night and watches the farm burn down.
Oh, God. Which just watches the flames, knowing that
they might have been alive in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But too scared. And also, obviously, your fight and flight take over.
Yeah. So the next account is from William Donnelly. So that's the second oldest son. So the mob like left Donnelly house one and headed to William Donnelly's home. He lived down the street from his mom and dad with his wife, Nora. His brother, John, had been spending the night, and as well as his friend, Martin Hogan. They were just having like a get together with their friends and family.
Yeah.
At 2:27 a.m., William and John were both awakened by knocking on the door and several people shouting about a fire. So they shouted, "There's a fire, William, come out, come out, there's a fire," to try and get them to leave the home.
That's fucked up.
Yeah. William remained in bed with his wife while John went to check who was at the door. Gunshots were immediately fired and John screamed out that he had been shot.
Oh my God.
Martin, William's friend, urged them to be quiet. He said that he immediately knew the mob was coming for William, having been, one, the smartest son, and two, the entire leader of their stagecoach business. Like, it was his business primarily.
Yeah. Martin knew what was up.
Yeah. So he said to them, like, as long as they believe that John was William and they had shot William, they would probably leave.
God, that's horrible, though.
Nora, hearing John choking on his own blood, despite Martin's urges, went to check on him. He lay in a pool of his own blood with 29 holes in his chest. Yeah.
29.
Like all of the men standing out there, shotguns, essentially.
Yeah. And I mean, shotguns, my understanding is they spew multiple bullets.
Yeah.
So that's a horrible death.
Yeah. John died minutes later in Nora's arms.
Yeah.
Martin, Nora, and William remained hidden in the house until dawn when they could be sure the mob had left.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
I didn't, when you were saying that you were going to do this story at the beginning of this episode, I didn't expect to be sad. Because I know the story.
A lot of people, when they tell it now, portray the Donnellys to have been horrible.
Yes. And I was just like, oh, it's just a legend. Like, I knew that they had died and that that was true.
But a lot of people say, like, they deserved it because of all the bad things that they did. But from my research, and, like, every website documents this, they were bad people in a town of bad people.
Yes. One to one, if you compare the Donnellys to the other people in the town, really, they weren't worse than anybody else. They were doing what they had to do against everybody else.
Yeah.
That's why I'm sad.
And the other thing that gets me is it's not like they attacked them when they were bad.
Yeah.
They had all calmed down. They had, like, moved in with their wives. They had went back to their lives. Like, the violence in Lucan had not come to a halt, but drastically decreased at this time. And that's when they chose to attack.
Yeah.
As, like, the way to ultimately end the violence in Lucan.
That's horrible, though, because they knew that they would be vulnerable because it wasn't at the
peak. They weren't on alert. Yeah.
It was not at the peak of the time that they were also attacking others.
Yeah. So despite both Johnny and William having eyewitness accounts and being able to name several of the vigilantes, in fact, most of the vigilantes, and two of the murderers realizing that they had their names, came forward and confessed. Despite all of that, no one was convicted of the murders.
Really?
Everyone was acquitted.
Because I'm sure the entire town was like, they're gone. This is what we wanted.
Yep. Essentially. County politics prevented any jury to come to an agreement about the case. So basically, like you said, everyone was just so relieved that the violence was over and all the politics around who was involved. Because you have to remember, like high up people, like their constables, like if they came to an agreement about the case, they're convicting their highest figures.
Yeah. And it was just probably easier for them to stay quiet.
Yeah. Well, it says that they believe that any convictions would lead to more violence and riots because of the status of the men involved.
Yeah. That's so sad.
Yeah. So, I mean, there is tons of notes that the violence ended after this, and several people believe that it was a mercy killing on Lucan. Like, they were mercy killing this family for the town of Lucan.
Yeah, to better the town.
Yes, where several others believe that this peace society put so much fear into the town that that's what ended the violence. The fear of what they did to this family.
Yeah.
The town was divided on why the violence ended, but the massacre of the Donnelly family did end the violence in Lucan. So that's pretty much it for the true crime part.
Yeah. It's really sad that it ended that way, but if it ultimately brought peace to the town.
Don't you dare say it.
It wasn't right, but it's like Romeo and Juliet.
Ma'am.
They had to die.
No.
For the Capulets and the Montagues.
To get along? Yeah. No.
I'm sorry. Like, I don't actually believe that, but I can see the other townspeople's opinions of that. Like, I can see why their opinion would be of that.
Yeah.
Because they're raising families. At this time, they're having large families. There's so much violence in this town. Everybody's probably scared to leave their house.
Yeah.
And if this is the thing that ends it.
I know. It just sucks because, like, a lot of people do believe that they were the violence. It just further cemented what James Carroll was preaching.
Yeah.
That the Donnellys were the sole cause of the violence in Lucan, because what happened after the Donnellys died, the violence ended.
Yeah.
But a lot of people do believe that the violence only ended because James and his band of idiots made the town scared.
Yeah. Like, that's what my opinion is now.
Yeah.
That it's not that the violence ended because of the Donnellys. The violence ended because these people took this situation so far.
Yep.
It's just really sad, though.
Yeah. Poor okay. Bridget. Well, to lighten the mood, we'll fast forward to the present day, where now the very different Lucan, Ontario, still experiences echoes from the Donnelly Massacre via paranormal encounters. So I just wrote down, like, quick bullets of different reports. So these are just some. Before I start here, I will say that the original barn still stands, but obviously since the house burned down, it does not. There's been a house rebuilt on it since, which they now use. It's kind of like a tourist trap in Lucan. They used to do, like, ghost tours and historical tours, and they still do to some extent, but it's kind of gotten into what I find kind of an icky money grab.
Oh, yeah.
They have, like, an escape room now about the Donnelly Massacre, which...
So I went to go visit my hairdresser, like, 2 years ago, because she actually still lives in Lucan, and they have a historical museum dedicated to the area, and they had built an escape room that was based off of
the massacre
being like, you have an hour to escape the flames
yep.
and the mob that's trying to get you. And that made me so upset.
Yep.
You're taking something that happened in this town.
That's really tragic and turning it into a money grab. No, for sure. When I was looking up like research on it, I kept running into like ads for the escape room and just all of the gimmicks. And I mean, I'm not saying that obviously the ghost and history tours weren't gimmicks, but at least they were like lighter gimmicks. They weren't like an escape room about a massacre.
Yeah. I'm assuming they would be somewhat educational.
Yes.
Where the escape room was literally
I went on the ghost and history tour. That's what I was saying when I did the report in public school. That's where I went. And it was literally just about like the history and the story. And they would tell you ghost tales, but it was like very tasteful. It was just the couple that lived there. Now it's a business. Like there's a company behind it.
Yeah.
It's a business and it's not my favorite thing. But because of this, most of my stories are before this happened, because obviously you're not going to get any good ghost stories anymore. It's a money trap.
Yeah.
But so here's a list of the encounters.
And they probably exhausted all the ghosts that lived there. All the ghosts are probably just like, leave us alone.
Like, get out. Yeah. Horses won't venture down Roman line at night on February 3rd or 4th of every year. So 3 horses have been reported to die within days of traveling down the road on either of those dates.
Oh my God.
So my mom, when I was in high school, she worked in Lucan part-time at Sealster Farms.
Yep.
That's a horse farm for anyone who doesn't know. And my mom would literally say like on the 3rd and the 4th, all of the horses would get super antsy. Sealster Farms is on Roman Line. I don't know if I mentioned that part.
No.
Sorry. Sealster Farms is on Roman Line in Lucan. And she literally would say on February 3rd and 4th, like every year, the horses would get super antsy. So when I read this fact, I was like,
you're like, oh, I know that that is true.
I know that that is true. And they're not even going down. But like to have horses die within days of traveling.
So much animal death.
I know. Lucan residents and even visitors to the town have reported seeing headless horses galloping through Lucan.
Oh my God.
In 1974, when Robert and Noreen Norton bought the Donnelly homestead and moved in with their 3 children, they reported horses going crazy as if possessed. The Nortons often provided boarding for friends' horses, and they would frequently find them running in circles, nostrils flared, and eyes filled with terror as if something was chasing them, but there'd be nothing there.
Oh my God. And horses, like, when they get spooked.
Yeah. The longer they lived at the residence, the stranger things got. Norton, who prided himself a rational man, began unable to explain the things going on around their house.
Oh God.
So there was so many because like everyone's like, oh, you guys live in the Donnelly house. So many interviews happened with this man. And like, you can see that for the first little bit that they live there, all of his interviews, there's like, there's nothing. But then like near the end of them living there, he's like, well.
Yeah. Cause he probably got to the point where he couldn't
deny it anymore. Yeah. So cause kitchen cupboards would slam, things would frequently go missing. He even in one interview says the thing that finally kind of started swaying him was a shirt had gone missing for a year.
Oh my God.
And it turned up a year later in the exact spot that he lost it, but folded and ironed. And he had never folded and ironed that. His wife didn't fold or iron things, but it was folded and ironed where he lost it.
That's so creepy.
Right?
An entire year, and then you get it back and the ghost was like,
I dry cleaned it for you.
Oh my God. That's horrible.
So then that's all I have from those residents. So in 1988, Robert and Linda Salt brought the property and immediately felt as if they weren't alone.
Ugh.
They stated that during their entire moving process, and even to this day, they constantly feel watched. Robert Salt said in an interview with the author of Haunted Ontario that it's not a constant feeling, but will occur anytime or anywhere, and you know there are eyes on you.
I hate that. I hate that so much.
Literally. Like, imagine living your life like that. So, like I said before, they did tours on the property in the very beginning before. And so many tourists have also said to feel eyes on them, but they would say that before Saltz would tell them that that's the thing that would occur.
And he'd be like,
let me tell you. Yeah. So he said he would use it as a segue into telling more ghost stories, because he'd have people on the tours be like, is there other people here? Is there more than one tour happening? Like, they would have people ask.
Yeah. I've felt that before personally. If anybody wants a story about that, let me know.
Yeah.
But it is not a nice feeling.
No. So there's also several reports. He reported, and they would report, that like people during the tours would like whip around, and he would be like, what are you doing? And they'd be like, well, someone tapped me on the shoulder.
Oh.
And it would happen all the time during the tours. And it was like always the very last person, like in the whoever was walking on the tours. And like it's not like he was telling them this happened. He would tell them when it happened. But
when people have genuine reactions to those kind of things, you can tell versus like if they're just trying to play it.
Yeah, play it up. Yeah, exactly. So, and as I said, the barn is still mostly the original Donnelly barn. Obviously, like, it's a very old barn. They've done things to keep it up.
Yes.
But it's still the place, the structure of the original Donnelly barn.
Mm-hmm.
It's been reported as a hotspot for encounters because it's so authentic.
Yep.
When tours first started, the Saltz family would allow people to spend a night in the Donnelly barn.
Oh, I remember hearing about this. Yes.
So that was still a thing when my friend and I went there. We really, like, we begged my mom. We wanted to do it so badly. My mom was like, girl, no.
Your mom was like, I might have raised you to be weird.
But this is where I draw the line, yeah. They stopped them maybe, like, 2 years after we went and never did them again. Just because, like, people would have such bad reactions and, like, it was such a liability thing. So, So a couple who stayed in the barn for one of the overnight, like, campouts that they offered reported being kept awake all night by footsteps walking around them. But there was no one else. They were alone.
Yeah.
At one point, these footsteps walked right up to the man, and he immediately felt pressure on his chest as if someone was pushing him.
Oh, God.
They fled, obviously. Like, they didn't spend the night.
Oh, that's so gross.
So another time, two students stayed in the barn and felt the same pressure on their chests at the same time, though. Like, at the exact same time, they reached for their chests and felt a pressure. One of the students said that one of the students dropped to the ground on her knees, saying that she heard screams echoing through the barn, but only she could hear them.
Oh.
Yeah.
That is not okay.
Yeah. The family themselves say they frequently hear footsteps through the house, but they'll be standing in the same room together. Like, sorry, it's them and their son, but everyone will be in that room, but they'll hear footsteps all around the house.
Yeah.
In rooms that they're not in. Robert Saltz has been awakened in the night to hear footsteps on the stairs, and he hears his name being called all of the time.
They call his name?
He's the only one to hear his name, but they called specifically Robert's name.
So that's like the other girl that could hear the screams or whatever the noises that no one else could. Oh, my God.
And Robert always says that it sounds like what he'd – like, it's a woman's voice, so it's believed that it's either Bridget or Joanna.
I'm like getting like the creep. I gotta sleep at my house by myself after with my three cats running around.
This is gonna get you then. I literally can see the goosebumps on your arms. One time when Robert was showering home alone, he heard someone enter the bathroom. He saw a shadow outside the shower curtain, which then moved and exited the bathroom.
Oh my God.
He got into the shower to verify that no one else was home and he was alone.
Oh my God. Can I tell them what happened this morning?
Oh my God, yes, because it goes so well with this.
I'm never showering again. So I was in the shower this morning and there was a brownout. I don't know if other people use that term because I've said that in front of other people and they're like, what is a brownout?
I've never heard that in my life.
So essentially a brownout is similar to
like a mini power outage.
Yes, but it's like when the lights flicker, not when the lights go completely out.
Yeah.
So there was a brownout. And the lights in my bathroom went completely out.
In the middle of your shower.
Yes, but like for 1 second. And the noise that came out of me, I was like, whoa. Because I live alone. No one can reach the light switch in my bathroom. So I was like, is someone in my house?
Oh my God.
And now I have to think about this guy, this figure in his bathroom.
Oh, it gets better. The son, like when his dad told him of this, he was like, you're like, no, that's not real. And so Robert and his son then tried to duplicate the shadow by standing in all different spots at all different times of the day over the next like 3 days. And it was like unduplicatable. Like there was no position that they could stand in with no amount of light that would cause the shadow that was caused.
I'm not okay right now.
The same son, they only have one, his name is Charles, frequently reported seeing apparitions that looked like the Donnelly family enter his room while he was playing when he was younger. He would always run to wherever his parents were in fear. And every time he described those apparitions, the descriptions matched Joanna, James, Tom, and Bridget.
Ugh.
At this time, he was too young to have ever seen them in much detail. So this was just coming out of his ass. Like he was literally pulling their descriptions out of his ass. I mean, he could have realistically stumbled upon pictures of them. The family was doing tours.
Yeah.
But they tried to keep him away from it as much as humanly possible.
Yeah. Kids are really perceptive, if I could speak English. But also at the same time, like some things.
His descriptions were like to a damn T.
And that's what I mean. Some things you can't explain.
Yeah. Several paranormal investigators have entered the house and all have experienced some form of encounters with the ghosts, either touches, unexplained noises on their equipment, or shadows that don't make sense.
Wonderful.
So then I just have some other that are like non, I just have some other random stories. I was going to say non-home related, but a couple of these are, so. It is common when people visit the Donley homestead for the Salts to show them some of their belongings. So they have some Donley belongings because, I don't know, they just acquired them. They wanted to make like a, make it a thing. So I don't know where I was going with that.
So people could like perhaps feel energy from them or something.
Okay. So one lady went with her mother. So she, her mom was very skeptical of all things paranormal. So she wanted to take her mom to kind of enlighten her. She admitted that it was kind of a joke. Like her mom didn't believe in anything paranormal. Lucan was close to home. So she just kind of was like, let's go. Like it was a joke. But her mom, when her mom was handed, it's like a piece of fabric of Joanna's. Like it was like a piece of a dress that is no longer a piece of a dress. So it's just like a piece of fabric.
Yeah.
The mother of this lady was handed it. She began to shake uncontrollably and later told her daughter that she felt as if an energy had entered her body.
Oh God. That's horrible.
Yeah. So then that's the last house related one. The rest are gravesite related. So on Roman Line, away from the homestead, actually across from Sealster Farms where my mom worked,
yep,
is the Lucan Cemetery and the Donley gravesites.
Yep.
In 1976, a man named Paul went to visit the cemetery on the anniversary of the massacre. When he arrived on Roman Line, he reported seeing what looked like blue lightning, literally going up and down the road. When he approached the grave, they saw a black figure standing over the gravesite that only vanished moments later.
Oh, God. Yeah?
Thanks, Max. Max is very upset about this black figure. Another report of a local who wanted to visit the gravesite with a friend from out of town came in, and they arrived at the grave, and as they got out of the car, there's a church. I should have prefaced this before for those who don't know. There's a church beside the gravesite.
Yep.
So they get out of the car, and the church bells start chiming. Not unusual for Lucan. They chime all the time.
Yep.
Not thinking anything of it, they approached the gravesite, and the closer they got, the faster and more frantic the bells chimed. To the point where when they got right to the gravesite, the bells almost sounded like they were going to fall off. They were chiming so rapidly. Unnerved by the bells, they walked back to their car only to have them slow and then stop altogether as they got in.
Oh my God. I can literally like hear the chiming of those bells.
Literally. I know. So, and then there's also several documented photos of ghosts at the gravesite. However, many of them have been attempted to be debunked. Because every single photo ever documented of ghosts at the gravesite happened to be during winter. Mm. And many of them say that could just be caused by breath in the cold air.
Yeah.
That being said, a lot of these photos are very figuresque. Like, I don't know how you're making breath figures. But a lot of debunkers have trouble believing it. And they're not validated at all because of the fact that every single one ever is during winter.
Yeah.
So that's my story.
Your story of the Black Donnellys?
Yeah.
Can I tell another personal anecdote?
Yes.
I just have so many stories from this area just because I did go to elementary school, like I said, in this area. I lived in this area. The story is very close to home for me, and I think Ashley did a really good job. So I'm glad you told it with the details that I did not know because I learned a lot, actually. But
I'm glad.
One of the things that I used to do – I don't know if I've ever told you this.
I don't know.
Sure I have. But so like Ashley had said in her story – there's a church. It's St. Patrick's Church. There's a graveyard where the gravestones of the Donnellys are located. Across the street where Sealstar Farms is on that side of the road is an elementary school. That is the elementary school I went to. I used to sneak away to go and collect money that people used to put on the gravestones for the Donnellys.
You little shit.
Because people thought putting money on the gravestones
would stop the haunting.
Well, and bring them good luck.
Yeah.
So me and my friends would like go and just steal the money because we were
horrendous.
$5. And literally people would say like, if you go and steal that money, you're going to be cursed for the rest of your life. And I cannot like say this enough. I have the worst luck out of everybody I know. And it's because I used to steal money from the Donnelly's graves.
Wow. That's lovely.
I know. I'm just such a good person, you know.
I will say that when I went on the Donnelly's tour, nothing happened to me specifically. Although like, and I don't know if that's just because, or it's just because of how they set up the tour, but like it did feel like eerie.
Yeah.
Like you felt the heebie-jeebies like right away. Like you did feel like something was watching you, but I think that might be the tone that they set for the tour.
Yeah.
But like my mom didn't even want to walk in the barn for the barn part of the tour because like they say this is the original Donnelly barn. Like they give you a disclaimer before you walk in. Like you may feel this, you may see this, you may hear this. Like they mentioned the screams, the touching, the footsteps. They also, I couldn't find this anywhere and I tried very hard, but in part of their disclaimer, they mentioned like you may lose sight for a second, that they'd had people have that happen. I could not find stories of that anywhere. And I tried so hard because I felt like that would be a cool ghost story to tell. But like they give you all these crazy disclaimers. My mom was like, nope.
See, and I feel like your mom is the type of person where she'd be like, this is bullshit. Like walk into the barn.
Oh no, mom wouldn't even walk in though. She was like, hard pass. Like, yeah. I don't need that.
So you know it's serious when Shelly's just
my mom out believes here. In ghosts. My mom like 100% like up and down believes in ghosts.
I don't think I knew that about your mom.
Oh God, yes. My like off topic for 5 seconds, but my mom's one stereo is like super weird and will just turn on even though no one touches it. And well, that could be just like an electrical glitch. My mom like up and down believes it's my grandfather. Every time we had something weird going on, like my mom believes in ghosts. Like
she's like, my dad's just here to say hi.
No, like for sure. Or when I was little, if like, oh, this is so off topic, but I'm going to tell it. So I don't remember. I will have to get my mom on this episode to tell this story better sometime. But when I was little, my mom was crying from something. I cannot for the life of me remember what. Not that I need to tell my mom's personal life anyway.
Yeah.
But my mom was crying and we were driving home from somewhere and she was very upset. And she's bawling her eyes out and I'm like 4, maybe younger. So I'm talking to myself.
Yeah.
Because 4-year-olds talk to themselves. I'm like laughing away and talking and living in imaginary Ashley land.
Yeah.
And apparently I stop dead, go dead silent, look at her, call her what my grandma called her, which I cannot remember either because this is really bad at telling the story. But I call her the nickname her mom called her. My mom, my grandma's dead. She passed away before I was born. But I call her the nickname my grandma called her.
Oh my God.
Like I literally stop dead talking, say, don't worry. I can't remember the name.
Yeah.
The it's nickname. Going to be okay. You just have to work through this. I'm here for you. And I'm like, it's like a well enunciated sentence. It's a nickname I've never heard. And then I just go back to playing. Like it never happened. My mom literally had to pull over onto the side of the road, she told me, because she was so shook from this experience. I don't remember. I was little. But, like, we were just talking about how my mom believes in ghosts. Like, yeah. This is one of the reasons.
Oh, my God.
My mom believes in ghosts. I don't remember the nickname, but it's, like, a cute little nickname, like, Bumblebee or, like, Honey Bear or, like, something, like, adorable.
Yeah. Oh, I have literal chills right now.
Like, how would a child know that, first of all? And, like, I'm very little. I don't enunciate. I'm, like, sing-song talking. And yeah. I stop dead. Say this perfectly enunciated sentence and then sing again. Like, I wasn't – my mom says the creepiest part probably was – I started, like where I ended in my song was where I started in my song.
So it's like you were taken over by
yeah.
your grandma.
Yeah. And like, I didn't even know the pause happened.
Yeah.
Like I didn't. Like my mom literally was like, Ashley, what was that? And I was like, I was just singing.
Oh. But I'm not okay.
So that's why my mom, Shelly, believes in ghosts. She's probably going to like hear this episode. And Dimitri is fanning herself right now.
I'm like crying. That is so creepy. Yeah.
I mean, like I haven't myself had like any super ghostly encounters that I can remember. Maybe my mom knows of some more cool ones that she can share and I can tell them again later. But that's a story that has always like stuck with me because every time I think like, why does my mom believe in ghosts? I remember that. I'm like, that's why.
Yeah.
That is why.
Speaking of ghost stories, the reason why this story also hits so close to home is while I lived in this area, that's when I experienced the most ghostly encounters, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
The house that I lived in during elementary school, there was a lot of stuff that happened there.
Like, we'll have to touch base on that some other time.
Yeah, definitely. If you guys want to hear that story, let us know. But my dad is the same way, like total non-believer. Total believer of ghosts, like swears up and down that I was possessed at a certain point in this house. My mom's like, your dad is so stupid. But I agree with my dad to a certain extent because I remember having feelings of things happening.
See, that's like, I don't know why I think that I might think it's cool because it's never happened to me, but like, I haven't had any, unless I repressed them, things happen to me. My fiance has a really cool one too. I'll have to get Keegan on.
Oh, I've never heard this.
Sometime. Yeah. So I have to go on this tangent for 5 seconds. I know I told you not to tell your stories because I didn't want to ramble, but Keegan swears up and down that he doesn't believe in ghost guys. He does. He swears up and down. But then if me and Demetria try to bring the Ouija board in, he like
freaks out.
He like freaks out. Like it's not a little baby freak out. Like he gets enraged.
Yeah. He's like, I'm leaving.
I'm leaving. I don't want to be here. Like he loses his goddamn mind. But then he's like, I don't believe in ghosts. But it's because he has some weird ass stories. But he doesn't believe in ghosts and he doesn't. And I'm like, if you don't believe in ghosts, why are you scared of the Ouija board? And he's like, I just am. Okay. And I'm like, that's not real.
Yeah. You can't, you got to pick between one or the other.
You have to pick a side. Anyway, before we like talk you guys to death, we can definitely save these stories for other times.
Yeah. If you want to hear them though, definitely, like I said, send us a DM, send us an email.
Yeah. We can try to get a episode together. That's just like our weird ghost encounters or like people around us. Maybe I can get some more from my mom. Yeah. I know I definitely have some that like friends have experienced.
Yeah.
I guess I do have one. I do have one. I won't tell it now because we're not doing that.
Yep.
But I do actually have one that I kind of like indirectly experienced. Like it didn't happen to me, but it happened to someone that I witnessed it.
Ooh.
So we'll definitely have to get into some ghost stories when we're not running at the end of a really long story.
Yeah. The other thing is too, like if you guys ever have stories about the places that we cover, we would be more than happy to hear about them. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. If you have some really cool Donnelly like encounters, share. Like we would be so open to doing like a fan episode or like an episode that's just like our stories, fan stories, just like little stories. We would do that.
For sure.
I guess that's it.
Yeah. To wrap this up, follow us on Instagram. Tales from the Midnight Society is our handle.
And you can definitely email us, talesfromthemidnightsociety@gmail.com.
Yep.
You'll be talking to me directly.
Ashley will be the one responding. If you have any suggestions for stories, please let us know. Again, we are a Canadian-based podcast, so
the stories have to be Canadian.
Yeah, keep them within the Kannada.
The Kannada.
The Kannada. But we were open to hear any stories from every different province, territory, wherever.
Yeah. Share.
Yeah, we would love to hear your stories because this, like I said, like we said in the first episode, this is what we want to talk about. Creepy things that are happening in our country. Want to see what's going on
here. If you have a story that like you don't think fits our mold, but you want to tell us anyway, tell us because it could fit our mold. We're breaking molds.
Yeah.
What molds? Who? Yeah. What topics?
We have talked about doing international quote-unquote stories, so definitely if you have stories that are outside of Canada but you're Canadian, or even like nothing Canadian about your story but it's really cool, really creepy, definitely let us know.
Yeah, because we may later down the road do a non-Canadian day episode, like international
story. I don't know if we're gonna keep that name, but like
we may have as well, like I said, fan episodes, personal episodes, international episodes, who knows. We're throwing this around. It's episode 3.
Yep.
We don't know what we're doing.
We're
just two idiots talking.
We could be at like episode 150 in the future.
And never have done any of this.
Oh my God.
Have a good night, guys.
Yeah, I guess see you later.
I thought about this actually when I listened to our episode 2, but we're telling people good night, but they could be listening to this in the morning. They could be listening. Like we're recording at night, but we should probably stop saying good night to people.
Goodbye. We're moving the Ouija board piece to the goodbye symbol.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
So long. Farewell. Sayonara. Okay.
Ciao, ciao.
Ciao, ciao.